Alzheimer's disease is the most common form of dementia in the Western world. After reaching 65, our risk of getting Alzheimer's doubles every 5 years until it reaches 50% at 85. But that doesn't mean it's a normal part of aging. While genes are one risk factor, there are numerous other health and environmental risk factors, and that means we can do many things to prevent it. But can it be treated? Stand by. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Hello and welcome to Go Healthy for Good. One of the features of Alzheimer's disease in the brain is inflammation. A healthy diet, regular exercise, and maintaining a normal weight can have a significant impact on the degree of inflammation throughout our bodies. Meet Rabbi Oscar. He was struggling with some serious health issues as a result of inflammation.
I ate a lot of stuff that wasn't good for me, and I didn't realize how bad eating normal or eating, which I thought was normal. And I was on all kinds of diets. I was on Atkins diet. I was on all these other things. And as far as I knew, I was doing okay. But in the meantime, I had a quadruple bypass. And nobody ever told me anything as far as what to eat the right way. But I figured, after that, I went on Atkins because everybody was talking about Atkins. And after that, I tried different kinds of diets, and I thought I was doing good. But I kept gaining weight. At one point, if I wanted to walk from, let's say, from one corner to the other, I would have to stop at least 4 or 5 times. I couldn't walk. I could hardly walk. Problem was that I just felt out of breath, and I felt that I just couldn't move. And if I had to walk, let's say, around the corner to my car, it took me forever to get to it. And it was really, I felt really terrible. At that point, I went back to my cardiologist, and they sent me to a nephrologist, and he says, they got to put me on dialysis. I come back and I tell my brother, who's an alternative medicine doctor, and he goes, no way. I'm going to send you somewhere to work on you. I said, where are you sending me? He says, don't worry, it's a good place. So I said, nah, I'm not going anywhere. A few hours later, he comes in, and he gives me a ticket, and he says, here's the ticket, and he came back out on it. You're leaving Thursday? No, it was on a Sunday. And you're going. I said, where am I going? He says, to Sacramento. I said, Sacramento? I have things to do over here. He says, your life is more important at this point. So I listened to him, and I came here.
Here being Wemar Institute. On today's show, we have two guests, both with expertise in nutrition. We'll see what makes good food for the brain and work out with Sean. So let's get started with the news. In the headlines today, air pollution and Alzheimer's, fishing linked to neurodegenerative disease, and Mediterranean food for the brain. Exposure to air pollution may interact with Alzheimer's genes to accelerate brain aging and predispose to Alzheimer's disease. Researchers located 3,650 older women from the Women's Health Initiative memory study who were carriers of the APOE gene and assessed their exposure to particulate matter via the US EPA air quality system. Those exposed to high levels of particulate matter had an 80% higher risk of accelerated global cognitive decline and a 90% higher risk of dementia. A mouse model was created to see how particulate matter changes the brain. Research has found more amyloid deposits and neurotoxins that especially affected the memory center of the brain in mouse brains. Based on the findings of this study, the researchers estimate that 20% of accelerated cognitive decline and dementia are attributable to residential exposure to particulate matter in air pollution. So know the quality of your air and limit your exposure to particulate matter. Mercury in fish and seafood has been linked to an increased risk for amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, an incurable neurodegenerative disease that causes muscle weakness, paralysis, and finally death. In a preliminary study, researchers surveyed 294 people with amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or ALS, and 224 without it, to see how much and what types of fish they ate, and whether they bought the fish or caught it themselves. Mercury exposure was measured in toenail clippings because levels correlate well with methylmercury levels in the brain, and they also reflect exposure over the previous 12 to 15 months. ALS was twice as common in those with the highest levels of mercury in toenails and the highest reported mercury consumption from fish they caught themselves. While these findings are compelling, the researchers stated that further studies are needed to verify them. They also advised the public to heed warnings about eating fish caught in contaminated waterways. A Mediterranean-based diet is associated with better cognitive function and less risk of cognitive impairment. The Health and Retirement Study assessed almost 6,000 older adults to see if adherence to a particular dietary pattern impacted their cognitive performance. Two dietary patterns were selected in this study, the Mediterranean diet and the MIND diet, which stands for Mediterranean-Diet Intervention for Neurodegenerative Delay Diet. Both diets are rich in whole grains, legumes, vegetables, fruit, and nuts, and low in saturated fats and simple carbohydrates, though the MIND diet outlines specific elements to include more often. After adjusting for age, sex, race, education, other health and lifestyle variations, both diets were associated with better cognitive function to an equal degree. Therefore, if you want to think well, think Mediterranean. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's health news. Today's first guest is clinical nutritionist Kelly Dorfman. Earlier, I mentioned that inflammation of the brain is one of the findings in Alzheimer's disease. So I asked Kelly what foods might exacerbate that.
Foods that are most associated with inflammation are fried foods. Sugar there's some concern about white flour as basically the white foods with inflammation, and processed foods.
So when you say white foods, let's run through them just to remind ourselves.
It's white flour, white sugar. Some people have dairy on that list. I mean, I don't know that that needs to always be on that list, but there might be some dairy foods that should be on that list. And then absolutely these processed foods, the things that are in a box with the chemicals that we've talked about in other segments, these are all unknown quantities that seem to be related to inflammation.
Right, and I always like to mention the white rice and the white pasta.
Ramen noodles and, yes, the one-minute noodles. Yes.
Yeah. And those are all highly processed.
Yes.
And they are going to be pro-inflammatory.
Correct.
Aren't they? Now, heavy metals are quite deleterious to the central nervous system too. What foods do we need to just think of when we're looking at heavy metals?
Well, you have to think about fish, of course, because the bigger fish are pretty mercury intensive. So that's
right, because they eat the middle-sized fish, which eat the little fish, and so they're just kind of concentrating it up.
Up the food line it goes, that's right. So that's probably one of the big foods you want to be concerned with heavy metals. And that's the one that we've identified as being a big problem with heavy metals.
Mm. Now, are there nutrient deficiencies that are associated with neurological diseases?
There are a number of deficiencies. Vitamin D, for example, one international group has said that one of the ways that you could treat or start treating mild dementia is making sure vitamin D levels are robust. So vitamin D, probably if it was discovered today, would be a hormone and not a vitamin because it's so regulatory in the way that it operates. So vitamin D has been...
I know you're not a physician, but what level are they recommending for good brain function?
A robust level would be 50 to 60 in the blood, and the lowest level before deficiency is 30. Hmm. So you're looking
a little bit above that for good brain function.
Absolutely. Hmm. So above the minimum.
Right. So vitamin D.
Vitamin E, like elephant. Vitamin E has been associated with being useful for brain function. It is a membrane stabilizing nutrient. It's fat soluble. It seems to be very important.
Yes, because there's a lot of fats and cholesterol in the brain and nervous tissues.
The brain is 50 to 60% fat, so that could be an issue.
Now, what about vitamin B12? Because that's pretty important. B12 and folate, they're pretty important for nerves.
Yes, they are, because they're regulatory nutrients for making neurotransmitters and for sending information around the brain. And as people get older, they can have trouble with B12 because it's very hard to absorb. And, of course, it's only found in animal-based foods, so it can be a problem for vegans in particular. But your absorption of it goes down as you age, and we know that elderly people tend to have very high risk for B12 deficiency.
All the more reason to supplement it before you get that old. More from Callie in our next segment, and now it's time to think about this.
You ate a lot of meat and seafood at the buffet. There were fruit and veggie options. I thought you were going to be more healthy now.
I am eating more healthy, but I figured we paid good money, so I'd eat more of the expensive food like the seafood and the meat.
You might actually be throwing away good money by doing that.
Well, what do you mean?
Come over here, let me tell you all about it.
Okay.
Well, you know how vegetarians live about 7 years longer than non-vegetarians?
Yeah, but what's that got to do with my precious money?
Well, if you lived 7 years longer, you could make more precious money by working. You can also eat more and enjoy more.
Oh, I never thought of it that way.
Well, vegetarians also have less heart disease, diabetes, strokes, cancer, hypertension, so your doctor's visits will be fewer and cheaper.
And I'll take less medicines, require less surgery, not to mention the pain and the suffering I can avoid.
There you go. And if we save money on your doctor visits, perhaps I can go and buy those shoes that I've had my eye on. $20 off this week.
Oh, so if you buy those shoes, we'll actually put $20 into our bank account?
Oh, wouldn't that be nice? If you want to save money, eat more fruits, grains, nuts and vegetables. Doctor's orders.
We're talking about brain health, and Callie Dorfman, nutritionist, has selected a wonderful array of foods that we can eat during the day to supply good brain food. So Callie, why have you chosen these foods for breakfast?
Well, of course, you want to start with a good breakfast because that sets your blood sugar up for the whole day. So it's important not to skip breakfast and try to put all your good foods later in the day.
Right, because you're going to need fuel for your brain, right?
That's right. You're going to need it. Because you don't need fuel, hopefully, at 11 o'clock at night. You need it at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
So I started with a whole grain granola here. It's a low-sugar granola. It has, you can see, some sunflower seeds and some nuts and seeds in it. And then you can actually add a little bit of real nuts. This is a tiny little brain there.
Yes, I see it. Looks just like mine.
That's right. And so at the end of the day, this is what mine looks like also. So this contains essential fats that your brain likes. It contains alpha-linolenic acid. Also, flax seeds contain alpha-linolenic acid. And we mentioned that fats are structural nutrients for the brain. So these literally incorporate into your brain and become part of your brain. So they're very, very important.
No wonder they look like a brain.
That's why.
Berries. Why berries over other fruit?
Well, there is a diet called the MIND diet. I don't know if you've heard of that, but it is a research-based diet. Every food on the MIND diet has been proven in research to help the brain. And the only fruit that's on that diet are berries. So that's why the berries are here. So we do know that in some studies that blueberries actually help with memory and with word retrieval, and they help the hippocampus to function better. So blueberries in particular have been studied, but we think that most of the berries are very good. I also threw in some scrambled tofu here because sometimes people don't want to have cereal, but we want to have some good protein. And this is a granola cereal. It's not a boxed cereal. So you can also do something like scrambled tofu. This has a couple little vegetables in it just to up your antioxidants from that perspective.
Right. And it's good to have legumes in the morning because they're going to give you sustained energy so your brain will keep ticking right through the morning rather than running out before lunch. So that's really important for that sustained energy piece, I think. Now for lunch, this looks so good. I could eat it right now, but I'll hold back. Why this for lunch?
Well, this is a bean burger. And I picked that because it, again, has legumes, which are good for protein. In studies with blood sugar stabilization, beans were number one in terms of stabilizing blood sugar for the longest period of time. So those are really good foods to have at almost any meal. And so there's a burger, and there's some tomatoes and lettuce, so there's some extra vegetables there. And, of course, as we mentioned before, all the things that are anti-inflammation, for the most part, with the exception of fish, tend to be in plant-based foods. And so a good salad, there's some olives in here. Olive oil has a lot of properties that have strong antioxidant to them.
Right, and so, to get them the olives whole rather than the processed oil, you've got a little edge there.
And we know that this is a real olive and not a pretend olive, which we will talk about some other time. So that's important.
Right, and now for dinner, you've got a couple of options here. Tell us what we should be having for dinner.
And we're visiting legumes again because as vegetarians, it's really important that we have legumes in ways that we enjoy as part of the diet. And some people are concerned about the digestion of legumes, but studies have found that as you eat them more, you tend to digest them better. So hopefully that will be happening.
Right, because they'll actually change your microbiome and improve your digestive function. So
that's right. And legumes do feed the microbiome, and they provide a lot of prebiotics, so that's important. Mm. So then I have some broccoli. Broccoli has been found to have sulforaphane, which is a really important phytonutrient that helps prevent cancer. And again, is anti-inflammation. Then I have a whole grain pasta. We do have whole grains throughout the day because that's one of the factors they found in the MIND diet is very important, is whole grains.
Right, because if you use processed grains and you're using white bread or white pasta or white rice, then you've got more oxidative stress going on in your brain.
And more inflammation.
More inflammation. Yes. Right.
And so, and then, you know, there's many different ways to do beans. I think people get run out of ideas. We all do the same 12 recipes, don't we? And we keep running them over.
You've got 12. I don't have that many. But yes.
Or maybe
that's
8.
Encouraging.
That's right. So it's good to shift it up sometimes. And so we put 2 different choices.
Yeah. Well, this looks so delicious. So you can see there is a wide array of foods that are going to look after your brain. And if you look after your brain, it is going to last you your whole life through. It's not going to run out before you do.
Great medicine. Rabbi Oscar had coronary heart disease and a quadruple bypass. Even so, he kept gaining weight, could barely walk, and was tipping into kidney failure. As an alternative medicine doctor, his brother decided that lifestyle change was a better option than going on renal dialysis, and he sent him to a lifestyle center.
So I came to Weimar, and I was about 110 pounds heavier than what I am now. And I followed the whole diet, and actually it's not a diet, the whole lifestyle. When I came here, they told me that I'm going to have to walk. I said, I can't walk anything. I can't walk. They said, you'll walk. So the first day when the doctors saw me, it was on a Monday, and Dr. Lukens was my doctor at the time, and he goes, he looks through, I had to bring all my medications, so he looks through all the medications. There were about 25 medications at the time, and plus insulin. And Dr. Lukens says, as of tomorrow, you don't take any of the meds. I go, Doc, are you sure? I said, do you have an ambulance on standby? So he starts laughing. He says, don't worry about it. We know what we're doing, and we wouldn't steer you wrong. So I go, okay. So I stopped the medications, and then I started. They told me I also have to walk. So first they told me that the first thing is for me to try to walk around the pole. So I walked around the pole a little bit, and then one of the nurses comes out and says, okay, we're going to walk the loop. I go, the loop? What is the loop? He says, don't worry. I said, what is the loop? She says, it's a roundabout going around, further around. So I said, okay, we'll try it. But I'm telling you right now, I hope you have time because I'm not a fast walker and it's going to take me time. She says, don't worry, I'll be there with you. Everything is fine. She walked with me. It took me to walk the loop almost an hour and a half. She came and, you know, she came with me. And then afterwards she told me, this is what you're going to have to do on your own. And sure enough, by the time I finished the whole 18 days, I had lost quite a bit of weight. And I was able to do the loop. I did the loop, in fact, in 20 minutes. And I did it afterwards 10 times going around before I left here.
In just 18 days, that's fantastic. Our first guest today is clinical nutritionist Kelly Dorfman. I asked her what the best foods are to prevent or treat cognitive decline.
One of the most important things you can eat that's anti-inflammatory is green vegetables. And this is something that's pretty low in the American diet. And one of the things they found in research is one serving a day of green vegetables is very important on an anti-inflammation, anti-dementia or dementia-preventing type diet. So that would be the number one thing, is to start with green vegetables. And then fill out with a few more vegetables, because almost all of the foods that have anti-inflammation properties are vegetables. There is one fruit that's been found to be pretty interesting, and that's the berries, like blueberries and strawberries. They may have some potential effects. And fish, the oils in fish have found to be anti-inflammatory, specifically EPA.
Okay, so some of those long-chain omega-3 fatty acids. Yes. Now, what foods can protect the brain from cognitive decline, or are we looking at exactly the same foods?
You're looking at the same foods. You're looking at a total diet that is low in inflammation and high in substances that remove toxins. You mentioned toxins. Another one I forgot to mention.
So what removes toxins?
Well, for example, zinc is a nutrient that bullies out mercury to some extent. I'd forgotten about the arsenic problem in rice, and you mentioned white rice, and so zinc is another nutrient that pushes that out. Vitamin C helps to push out toxins in the food. And so you want a variety of foods in your diet, but a lot of plant-based foods.
And selenium does as well, I think.
Selenium also, yes.
Will also help to push out toxins.
Yeah, there's a number of them, because the nutrients do work in a balance that way. In fact, they have found in some studies, if your zinc level is low, you're more likely to absorb mercury and poisons from the environment.
So it's like a seesaw. So where can we find our zinc?
Zinc is found in some... whole grains will have some zinc in them, of course. Some beans will have, peanuts will have them.
So, again, lots of different things. Are there herbs and supplements that can support a healthy brain, or even if a declining brain? Would you use herbs and supplements in that situation?
Well, I think in particular, if it's a declining brain, you definitely want to be looking at supplements. And there is a family of supplements called phospholipids. There's one in particular called phosphatidylserine that they've studied with dementia, and they found that when people took it, they actually slowed down the progression of dementia. It is a structural nutrient. It incorporates into the brain. The brain is 60 to 70% fat. So the kind of fat you eat is very important, because it's literally going to build your brain the way you put a brick into a wall. So this is very important. And phosphatidylserine has been found to improve word retrieval and short-term memory, and also dementia decline. It seems to slow it down.
Phosphatidylserine. Anything else? Any other particular supplements that you recommend?
Yes, choline helps with speed of processing, for example. That can be very useful. That's one of the things that as you get older, you notice that you're not so quick on the Johnny on the spot. It takes a little longer to pull those words up, and that's one of the things that marks people as aging, and choline can be very useful for that. I mentioned vitamin D. Vitamin E is definitely part of a dementia prevention program also.
So four or five things then.
At least. I mean, for a beginning program, choline, phosphatidylserine, vitamin E, vitamin D, a good multiple vitamin that doesn't have iron in it.
Because and probably a B vitamin.
Which would be part of that.
Right, to include that B12.
Yes.
Now, I've read that overeating is sort of deleterious, and that calorie restriction or overnight fasting has been put into some of these protocols for cognitive decline.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, because the worst thing you can do for inflammation, probably almost worse than the bad food, is overeating. And it's, of course, something that we do a lot. It's very pro-inflammatory. And extra fat tissue also causes inflammation problems. So just watching your portions can be very important, making sure you don't put on that extra middle age weight as you get older. That can be one of the most important things you do to prevent cognitive issues. So that's very important. This overnight fasting, the 12-hour fast, what happens then is that your brain relies on ketones, which are a selective fuel to run itself. And even though your brain is 2 to 3% of your body mass, it takes up 25% of your energy. So the kind of energy that you use is important. And so this ketone running on ketones for a few hours because you haven't eaten for 12 hours has been found to be very useful in dementia prevention.
That's amazing. So you would ideally have your last meal. Well, a lot of us do that though, don't we? We have
seven.
Our last meal at 6, 7, and then we don't have breakfast till 7 in the morning. So
exactly.
12 hours is all you need?
12 hours seems to be enough. This further restrictions you're mentioning where people try to get down to 15% lower than the average weight, that's a very difficult diet, and there's been some controversy about whether that really is life extending. The problem is if you get sick or have some kind of problem and you're that low weight, it can actually be dangerous. So,
yeah, I think calorie restriction, we can reduce calories without losing weight though, can't we?
Yes, well, that's true.
So, yes, I think you're right. It depends whether we need to lose weight or not. But there are some lifestyle practices that are not food related, yet they're important for brain health.
And the number one absolutely is exercise.
Exercise?
Exercise is more important than almost anything they found. And we actually just saw a study recently that found that exercising increases your telomere strength or length. And telomeres are the ends of your chromosomes. And as you get older, they tend to shrivel up just like the rest of us. And they found that exercising, particularly in middle age and later, is very dynamic for helping that to slow down. In every study, exercise has been the number one thing. You must keep moving.
Which we're going to do with Sean right after the break. But first, consider this. We all want to be smarter and wiser. And there's advice on how to achieve that in the Bible. King David wrote in Psalm 119, I have more insight than all my teachers, for I meditate on your statutes. I have more understanding than the elders, for I obey your precepts. Notice this advice is twofold. First, to be smarter than his teachers, he meditated on God's word. And then he put what he learned into practice by obeying it. That made him wiser than experienced and older leaders. Jesus' brother James wrote that if faith is not followed by action, it's dead. So practicing what we learn is vital. One great biblical example of that is the prophet Daniel, whose book is still studied and relevant 2,600 years after he wrote it. In the book, we learn that Daniel meditated, he was obedient to God, and he also followed a good diet and lifestyle. And the results were astounding. It says that in all matters of wisdom and understanding, the king found him and his three friends 10 times wiser and smarter than all the royal counselors in the realm. That's impressive, right? So are you ready to begin your cognitive training program? Then start each day with an in-depth Bible study. Move on to some vigorous exercise and then have a healthy breakfast.
We're back and it's time to turn your space into a gym. Sean's here. Hi, Sean.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do we got?
All right, so we got some dumbbells. I mean, you can use any size dumbbells, but today we have a 5-pound dumbbell and a 10-pound dumbbell. Getting something that will challenge the muscles is a great way to burn some calories, so about 10 pounds is a good way to challenge the muscles and burn some additional calories, okay? So we're going to start with a quick warm-up, which is great. Remember, dynamic exercise is a great way to warm the muscles prepared for exercise, okay? So let's go here. Stay in place. What you can do is take your timer for about 30 seconds, or you can do it for reps, you know, 30 reps. Each time your foot goes down, we'll consider it a rep. Let's do
each
five
foot?
More seconds. Yep.
Or just the one
yep,
side.
Yep, like 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. You can do that for about 30 seconds. The heart rate will go up. You start to build a little sweat, and that's what you need in order to prepare the body for movement. All right, let's grab our dumbbells. I'm gonna show you what they call like around the globe lunges, okay? We're gonna lunge forward, lunge to the side, and lunge to the back, all right? So it looks like this. One. One. And one. Okay, every time you go around, consider that one. You give it a try, go ahead.
All right.
One. To the side, one, back, and one. Now go forward. Two. Two, make sure you're breathing. And two. Now the beauty of that is that you're getting to work multiple planes of the muscle. All right, so you're working the forward lunge, the side lunge, and the back lunge, which works a little bit more balanced. Mm. Okay, so you can do that for about five on each side, right? And then go to the other side, because if you do one side, you're gonna be lopsided. Okay.
And the other side's gonna get awful.
Yeah, the other side, you're gonna walk in circles or so, okay?
Okay.
So the beauty of that too is that you burn a lot of calories because you have your dumbbells.
Right.
Okay, so you have an opportunity to burn lots and lots of calories. So challenge yourself, choose a weight that's gonna be challenging for you.
Yeah, because you're working your core and your leg muscles. Those
absolutely.
Big muscles. So
big
they're
muscles.
Gonna
on that really side good. Lunge, remember to keep that leg straight, okay?
Uh-huh.
Side, try that side lunge again. Forward, side lunge, keep it straight. Yes, that's it. You want to do it right from the beginning.
Hey.
From the beginning. All right, good.
Yep.
All right, so number two, what we're going to do is work our shoulders. All right, hands here. We're going to go up. I want you to do this for about 10 to 15 reps. Get a good burn, and you don't need to go any higher than this. All right? Make sure you're breathing. Your heart rate should be going down at this point. Okay? Give me one more. Remember, 10 to 15 reps, all right? Now let's go back to your legs. So we worked the quads, we worked the shoulders, and now we're gonna go right back to our hamstrings now. So feet shoulder width apart, go all the way down, get a nice stretch, and come up. There you go, and come up. Now how can you make this a little bit more challenging? As you come up, you can add a bicep curl. All right, another way to burn calories, all right? One more, all the way down and come up, all right? You can do those three exercises for about maybe 2 to 3 rounds. Trust me, you'll get a good calorie burn, you get a good sweat, and the most important part is you have fun doing it.
Absolutely.
Now, the most important part after you finish the big workout is cool down, okay?
Yep.
So I advise you to take your right arm, let's stretch out the delts. Three, two, one, switch sides. Here's another one, feet together, reach all the way down, stretch out those legs. You got a good combination of exercises, stretching out your upper body, stretching out your lower body, come up nice and slow, and you are done.
Great, thanks, Sean.
You're welcome.
Nuts, like almonds and peanuts, are full of healthy antioxidants. But not every almond or peanut on the supermarket shelf has the same antioxidant punch. Most of the nut's antioxidants are found in their outer soft covering. When this is damaged through peeling or blanching, half or more of the antioxidants are lost. Choose raw almonds over blanched and enjoy your peanuts with the brown papery covering intact. Choosing nuts in their natural state is another ageless advantage.
It's question time. Rita asks, will adopting a vegetarian diet prevent polyps from growing in my intestinal tract? That is exactly what the research is telling us, so yes. Someone called and asked, what causes swollen ankles? Wow, there are so many causes. It can just be from standing a lot, especially in hot weather. You can have sluggish lymphatics. Some people just have that, they're born with it. For some people, it's venous insufficiency. That's when you get varicose veins or the one-way valves in your legs don't work properly, and so fluid just collects down there. So walking will help that. Can be from infections, blood clots, heart, liver, or kidney disease. So those are pretty serious. So it can be anything from mild to serious. There are also many medications that can cause it, like blood pressure meds, steroids, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, diabetes medications, antidepressants,
and hormones. So lots of different reasons. And finally, Susan asks, could you suggest ways in which I can replace yogurt with a dairy-free probiotic? I eat lots of fresh fruits, veggies, Greek, and homemade yogurt. Well, good for you. Well done, Susan. You can actually make yogurt or kefir with soy milk. Usually it needs to be a fairly thick, creamy soy milk, but the most effective way to get probiotics is actually to take it in capsule or powder form. Now, I love those questions. Keep them coming. Remember, you can send them by text, by phone, just leaving us a message, or contact us on our website. Like us on Facebook and become part of our Go Healthy for Good community. And now, let's go down to the store. The blackberry grows wild and can be a nasty weed with all those thorns, but it produces such sweet, delicious berries. We're not the only ones that like eating blackberries. So do the birds, the badgers, and even the red fox. And deer enjoy grazing on their leaves. You can see from the dark, rich colour of the berries, there are lots of polyphenols like anthocyanins, quercetin, salicylic acid, and ellagic acid. They contain a good amount of soluble fibre. And with all the antioxidants, they are good for the heart and also for the brain. In fact, they are the top antioxidant food in the United States. Their seeds are even nutritious, containing omega-3 and omega-6 fats, as well as some protein and carotenoids. A whole cup only contains 60 calories. Don't cook them, just eat them raw. Bon appetit! Our second guest today is Wes Youngberg. He has a doctorate in nutrition, has his own clinic in Temecula, California, where he helps people reverse chronic diseases, including early Alzheimer's disease. I asked him why exercise is so effective at improving cognitive function.
Exercise is a wonderful way to impact brain health because it literally stimulates the production of the brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is a hormone-like substance that literally helps heal the brain and recover memory if it's been lost. So how do we do that best? Well, the number one risk factor for developing Alzheimer's or dementia of any kind is insulin resistance of the brain. So if we know how to prevent and reverse prediabetes or diabetes, we know how to prevent that aspect, which is the main aspect of Alzheimer's. So walking immediately after meals or some type of light to moderate exercise immediately after most meals is the most important type of exercise that we can do to limit our insulin resistance, to improve our blood sugars, to decrease the amount of insulin the body has to produce in order to control blood sugars and therefore optimize brain function.
Wow, so that's moderate to light exercise after meals. Is there another time of the day that we should be doing more vigorous exercise, or is that sufficient?
The goal when it comes to preventing cognitive decline is not asking, you know, what's the least I can do, right? The goal is to ask, what else can I do to protect my brain and optimize my function? Because we're all at risk for cognitive decline. So the answer is, let's add on other things that can be very beneficial, but in a different way. So for instance, a couple hours before eating, we can engage in a more intensive exercise. And it's been shown that intensive exercise, or actually the intensity of exercise, is directly proportional to how much brain-derived neurotrophic factor you produce. In other words, how much healing elixir your brain is producing to heal itself. So within reason, we want to make sure that we're taking advantage of not only light to moderate exercise immediately after meals to control our insulin levels, but also to have a good workout schedule where we're doing resistance training, where we're really strengthening the muscles, and strength of the muscles is directly proportional to the health of the brain. In fact, one of the first signs of dementia is not memory loss, it's actually weak muscles. So by optimizing muscle strength, we directly influence brain health. So if you want to do brain exercises, the first thing you should think about is strengthening your muscles.
Wow, you'd never connect the two. Now, the work that you're doing in the Youngberg Lifestyle Clinic is following the Bredesen protocol, which
unlike conventional medicine, is actually giving hope to Alzheimer's. Tell us how that protocol was developed and how it's going.
Well, I've had the distinct pleasure of working very closely with Dr. Adele Bredesen now for over 6 months. And essentially, he's a conventional neurologist who's been doing neurologic research. He's the director of the UCLA Alzheimer's Research Center. And he's been doing research for over 30 years. But he has now demonstrated with over 100 patients that you can reverse subjective cognitive decline or impairment 100% of the time. And for mild cognitive impairment or early Alzheimer's, you can actually reverse that within 6 months, 88% of the time.
We've all felt had the feeling where our brains turn to jelly when we're chronically stressed, severe stress, or if we lack sleep. What do you advise for the problem of stress?
Yeah, well, you know, we're all dealing with stress every day. It's kind of the norm, isn't it? And that's why it's normal to develop dementia. It's normal to develop Alzheimer's. Now, by the time we're 85 years old, one half of us will have Alzheimer's unless we actually address the cause. So we have to be successful and be healthy. We have to learn how to effectively deal with stress. And Dr. Nerida, that begins with what we just got done talking about, and that's the importance of exercise. If you're not exercising on a consistent, regular basis, if you're not getting that after meal activity, if you're not getting that workout at least 3 times a week, you're going to be stressed. Your body was designed to be fit and to work out. And if we're not doing it, the body's going to experience more stress, even if you don't really have that much to feel stressed over. So the exercise is a release of tension that then helps us sleep better, which then further improves our perception of stress and how we deal with it.
Is there anything else that you can suggest for sleep?
Oh, wow. The key with sleep is practicing what we preach. I struggle with this one myself. The bottom line with sleep is that we have to plan on it. And so the biggest challenge with most people with regards to sleep is it's just not properly planned for. We just work until we're done. We don't have a regular sleep time. We don't have a system developed where we kind of prepare and ease ourselves into good, healthy sleep. And so there has to be some rules, some limitations that we place on ourselves where we're not dealing with any electronics after 9 o'clock, where we're not watching the crazy news and exciting things on TV after 9 o'clock. We have to give the brain chance to calm down. So one of the tricks is just setting limits on ourselves after 9 o'clock, no more electronics, no more screens, no more white light, no more. You know, we just need to calm down and get into a relaxation routine of maybe reading, of listening to music that's calming, of journaling, of having our devotions, of spending time with the Bible, of prayer. And so by the time 10 o'clock, 10:30 rolls around, our brain and our body are ready to sleep, and we need to get that 7 to 8 hours. If we're not, that's actually a major risk factor when it comes to the Bredesen protocol and determining what causes or what limits our ability to reverse dementia. Where we get into the diet, we get into spending time outside, we get into the issue of making sure that we're outside in sunlight for at least half an hour a day.
More from Dr. Youngberg after the break, so stay with us. Rabbi Oscar had diabetes, obesity, and kidney failure, plus a history of quadruple bypass surgery. He arrived at Weimar Institute for a lifestyle change program on 25 medications. By the time he left, just 18 days later, he was off all his medications, walking 4 times faster, and already losing weight. At home, he kept at it, but then the holidays, and he fell off the wagon. Now he's back for another session. Let's see how he's doing.
I got home and everything was fine. I followed all the things how they told me to cook and to do, and I did it. And at that point, they said, that it's okay, I don't need dialysis, because I had lost weight and everything else. Everything was sort of starting to click in. 7 or 8 months later, it was the holidays, and everybody was screaming at me that I'm crazy because I'm not probably getting enough protein, I'm not getting enough food, I'm not getting enough anything. And I had to go to one place to stay at, and the problem was that she didn't have enough room in the fridge for me to bring the vegan stuff. So she said, I'm sorry, I don't have any room. So I ended up not taking it, and when I got there, the only foods that they had was regular food, and I had no choice. So I ate, and once I ate, I fell off the wagon. And it got to a point afterwards that I, you know, not that I gained more weight, but everything was not 100%, because I was eating the meat, I was eating fish, I was eating chicken. So I guess that was working on me, where again, I was feeling sluggish, I had no oomph at all. And again, my brother told me, who was in alternative medicine, he says, you're going back. So I said, you're going back. So I made the my son made the arrangements, and I came back for the second time now. And I'm glad that I came here, and I'm feeling 100 times better than what I did when I left New York. And God willing, this time, I'm not letting go of that wagon.
And that wagon's worth hanging on to. Today's second guest, Dr. Wes Youngberg, is using the Bredesen protocol to help people stop and reverse Alzheimer's. I asked him how well people are able to follow the protocol, especially in terms of diet.
When it comes to nutrients, Dr. Bredesen says that the two biggest complaints that he gets from patients who are on the Bredesen protocol are, number one, oh, the diet's just too tough. Like, are you kidding me? I can't give up all those foods. I can't stop eating sugar. And you know, that's kind of a deal breaker. If we're not willing to stop eating refined carbohydrates, don't expect to improve your brain function. It's refined carbohydrates are literally neurotoxins when it comes to our goals to optimize our brain. The UCLA recently did a study with mice showing that if you just simply feed mice fructose with their water, just add a little fructose to their water, like a diluted soda, it was dementigenic. It actually caused them to forget how to run through the maze. And so there's foods that are dementigens that literally cause dementia, and it's temporary. As long as we're eating that food, it's like you're on this constant drug that literally causes a temporary dementia. Well, for most people, that ends up being a chronic dementia because they never stop eating that dementigenic food. Well, there's other foods that are what Dr. Bredesen called synaptoblastic. And synaptoblastic means it's actually growing synapses or reconnecting synapses that were previously unconnected or disconnected, now are being reconnected. And as you know, every memory requires its own synapse. And so without that synapse being connected, we lose the memory. But the memory never goes away. It's just that synapse gets disconnected. So we need to promote synaptoblastic strategies. And all the testing that we do in the Bredesen protocol helps us understand where we need to focus our attention. And so the second thing that most people complain about on the Bredesen protocol, or the ones that have something to complain about, is really the number of supplements. And that's because there are specific nootropic or nutritional factors, specific factors that greatly enhance brain function. And when we have certain areas that are defective or dysfunctional, we can use certain supplements effectively, but it's personalized for everybody.
I've heard the story of the woman who gave her husband, who had Alzheimer's, coconut oil. So is that part of what you're talking about? How does that work?
Actually, what I like to recommend to patients is organic coconut flakes or eating actual coconut meat. It's extremely healthy, and there's been a lot of bad press about coconut because it is certainly a saturated fat, but it's a completely different type of saturated fat. It's a medium chain triglyceride type saturated fat that is especially therapeutic for the brain. It's really healthy for the brain. And so eating some amount of the coconut flakes along with a meal actually stimulates a secondary energy source for the brain in the form of natural ketones. And you know, we used to think ketones were all bad because of diabetic ketoacidosis. When we fast, I said, when we go on an overnight fast, so no food after an early dinner until breakfast, that 12 to 18 hour fast actually begins to generate ketones, and ketones literally heal brain tissue. Okay, so we want to optimize that form of ketone generation in the body, and that is best done by fasting in between meals, 5 hours between breakfast and lunch, 5 hours between lunch and dinner, ideally. We don't have to be, you know, petty and rigorous about that, but we should be consistent about that in general, because that optimizes brain function. And then no food, like late night snacking is the anathema of brain health. That's almost like a guaranteed dementigenic activity that will over the years cause Alzheimer's. And so no snacking after dinner until breakfast. And, you know, once you get used to it, it's actually not that hard. And guess what? We sleep better when we don't snack late at night. And so sometimes it was Gordon McDonald once said, sometimes you have to say no to things you really want to do in order to say yes to the best of things.
Absolutely.
And so really, the Bredesen protocol and protocols like that are designed to give us the best of things so that we can experience joy and vitality as we age into the 80s, 90s, and even into the centenarian years.
A great goal to have a clear mind and a healthy body at a ripe old age. However, like Rabbi Oscar, there are a few healthy habits we'll have to adopt first, like building muscle strength so that we can build a strong brain. To walk after meals, eliminate simple carbs, eat whole grains, fruits and veggies, and be sure to avoid heavy metals and pesticides as much as possible. Know your levels and supplement with B12 and vitamin D if needed. Leave 5 hours between meals and 12 hours fasting overnight with no late night snacks. Go to bed early with a good book, meditate, and guard sleep time. Spend 30 minutes outside every day. And if you want to know more about reversing Alzheimer's, go online to dryoungberg.com. That's all from me today. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.